You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
As I was in the room, I realized to myself, I was so used to being told or like regimented, okay, these are your parameters, be within these things. And these people were literally asking me to just do whatever and not care.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of Why I'll Never Make It. And today is the second annual Audition Stories episode. Now, last year's episode did so well, I've decided for the second annual to have it in two parts. That's right, we'll get one this week and a second part next week. And the stories you'll be hearing today are from those who have been acting, directing, coaching, and even a talent agent. And they'll make you laugh and cry and even wonder how we do the things that we do in the room. And so I wanted to start off with something that all of us actors know about, and that is the audition book. For straight plays, it's that Rolodex of monologues that's in your brain that's ready to go at a moment's notice. For singers, it's that book, that physical book that we bring into the room and plop in front of the pianist and show off our best 32 bars or whatever they're asking for. And last year, I had on Amy Marie Stewart, who is a vocal coach, singer, and actress herself, and she talked about the audition process, and specifically, she even did a video where she interviewed a bunch of different casting directors and actors about that audition book. Now, she did it from the viewpoint of musical theater, but it applies really to any art form that you want to audition for. And so in today's episode, as we hear these stories, I want to dispel some of the myths surrounding this audition book. And the first one of these is that it needs to be a huge book full of 20, 25, 30 songs or monologues, and that is just simply not the case. First off, there's only so much that we can prepare as actors, and if we're going to be doing 20, 30 songs at a moment's notice, are we really going to be able to do each one of those equally just as well? Same goes with monologues. If you have 20 or 30 monologues in your brain, not only is it a matter of being able to act each one of those differently and on point and with distinguishing characteristics in each one of those, there's also the time it takes to memorize a monologue or a song. And so really, it's best that we narrow it down to maybe 6 to 9 songs that really showcase what we do. The same goes with monologues. You could have even less, really. 4 to 6 monologues representing classical theater and contemporary theater. And so bringing in a huge book into the audition room, it really does a disservice to you. Because wouldn't you rather just have just a handful of songs or monologues ready to go for any audition? I know for myself, that certainly is a lot off my mind if I know that I just have to focus on just a few things in that audition room. But the first story that we're going to hear today comes from Kelvin Moon Low. He is an actor who's currently in the Broadway cast of Beetlejuice. He has a completely different take on this audition book altogether. Not having one.
You know, I had this thing for a while where I thought to myself, whatever I do, just be memorable. You know, like as I was crafting all these auditions, I don't use an audition book anymore. That's new. You know, for musical theater performers, people always talk about like their book
their
and
book.
They're curating their songs, right? For like what I need in the future. I don't do that anymore. I've thrown it out.
Hmm.
So now whenever I get a new audition, I go, okay, I have to read this show and I have to think about what these people want, and I'm going to go find a song. And maybe I know the song already, but a lot of times I go, I have to learn a new song for this audition. So for my Broadway debut, which was Sideshow, I decided that I wanted to see what the original Sideshow was, and I wanted to listen to the music and come up with something. And I decided that Sideshow always had this very mystic energy around it, something that was a little bit unexpected, a little bit dark. And I started deciding that I was like, well, it's not important what song I sing, but it is important the vibe that I start selling.
Yes.
So where did I go? I went to a magic shop. I went to a magic shop and
sense.
I spent about 5 hours there, and I drove this poor man at the magic shop insane. I said to him, I was like, I'm auditioning for a Broadway musical and I need, tricks. And like, eventually he completely gave up on me, and this woman walked in and she loved musicals and she worked at the magic shop, and she set me up with a couple of tricks that she's like, oh, you could do this. And she set me up with a rope trick.
So you did actually buy something from the shop.
I did. Okay. I didn't buy the rope because she's like, you can get this rope anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just the rope. And then I did buy a device.
Okay.
I think I came back the second time and the guy saw me again and he was like, oh, God.
And he ran.
But I sang I Don't Care Much from Cabaret. And I had this rope that was tied around my waist. And it somehow, like, I was able to fully tie myself together. And I, like, had Laura Stancic, who was casting at the time, like, test the rope and see, and I'm still singing I Don't Care Much.
Oh my gosh.
And like testing the rope, and I'm like, no way is this gonna work. Like, first of all, I'm not a magician at all, and I tied myself up and then somehow I got out of it, and like, she was impressed, but I was like, is she fake being impressed by me and just like hoping that I just disappear and
right,
never
thank
come
you.
Back
next.
Okay. So I get a phone call back. That was the initial call. No creative team. And she calls him back and says, Kelvin, I'm bringing you in for the creative team next week. And I go, great. Any notes? She goes, do exactly what you did today. So I did it.
Okay.
All right. So I came back in and I did it for them. And meanwhile, again, another group of people where I'm like, I'm not a magician. I'm totally faking this. I don't know what's happening. This poor, girl in the magic shop taught me this trick. And this is what it is. So they like the energy. They like the vibe. And so I got a call back from that. I guess they either still... I still think that they think that I was psychotic. or pulling something. Certainly, I was literally pulling tricks over their heads. And then I finally came in for my final callback. And, a sensible person would be like, well, great, they already like me, I'll just do whatever. No, I wanted it so bad. I went back to the magic shop again and I bought the device. Okay, she showed me the device. I bought it this
time.
Okay. And I don't know if I can recommend this to everyone, but I decided that I needed to up the ante.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's the final callback. You want to like give them something, the wow factor.
Right. Exactly. Let me preface it that I was watching America's Got Talent.
Okay.
Which you always see on those shows.
Yeah.
That you have to start as something on a very basic level, but you have to evolve your show over time.
Right. It
has to keep getting better. So I thought to myself, I have to get something better. This rope trick isn't going to do it anymore. I have this whole thing.
Oh, gosh.
So I go and I get this device, and it's a smoke machine, okay? It's a smoke machine. There's, like, wires through my, like, I have this jacket on, and, like, my entire body is, like, wired
from head to toe with batteries.
Right? And, like, it's this big coat because it's got to, like, house these wires, and I don't know what I'm thinking, but you know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, I must be memorable. I need to up my game. And so they call me in, and, I go into this audition and people are walking out and I sing a new song. And at this point, I hit this button and it's not doing. It's supposed to be like, it's just supposed to be like a little hint of smoke.
Like a mist around you. Okay.
Okay. And so I hit the trigger of the button and nothing happens. I was like, I've spent so much money on this device. I'm doing this, like, I'm holding this wine glass that's, like, mystic, and I'm, like, trying to, like, conjure this woman out of this wine glass.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's not doing the trick, right?
Okay.
But so now I'm, like, singing the song, and, like, the David Copperfields of the world are, like, looking as cool as possible. But I'm trying to look as cool as possible, but I'm sweating. I'm sweating.
Because it's not happening.
I'm sweating. I don't know if I'm sweating if it's not happening or because there's literally a hot battery that is burning acid into my back.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I just keep hitting the button out of panic, mm-hmm. you know? And I was like, please, please, please just work. Well, what happens when you hit the smoke machine button several times is now it's cranking.
Yeah.
And by the end of the number, I look like I'm on fire. You know, it's just the whole, where the small puff of smoke is supposed to be happening, it's now like billowing out of my coat as if I, like there's something on fire. And it did feel like on fire because the battery pack was like, overworked and literally yeah. burning the backside
oh my gosh.
That where it's strapped into my back.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't work out the way that I wanted it to, but it still was weirdly impressive.
It still
them.
Gave this effect.
It gave an effect, and they were like, what is happening? Lo and behold, nobody has ever spoken to me about that audition. Truthfully, nobody's ever spoken to me about it.
Because what would they say?
What would they say? Except for, we're glad you didn't set yourself on fire that day. I got the job. So, best and worst and experience in one.
Because that's not exactly something that you can, like, go into an audition class. Hey, I'm your coach. Here's what you do at auditions.
Right.
You buy a coat and you set yourself on fire.
Yes.
Like, that's not exactly tips that everyone can use.
Yeah, but this is what happens when you are desperate to be on Broadway mm-hmm. and you think they're like, I've got to change it up.
And it is that desperation that leads us to not only have too many songs in our book, but also have too much variety in our audition book. We want to have a song from this era, from that era, from this type of musical, contemporary, traditional, ballad, comedic, dramatic, driving, modern. We want to throw all these different categories into our audition book when really we just need a handful that show off who we are and the types of roles that we get cast in. And maybe one or two songs that kind of show we can break that mold, we can go beyond our type and do other things. The goal of our audition book is for us to meet the expectations the team has for us in the room and then find ways to defy that. This next audition story comes from Cheryl Lee Seacom, who I interviewed last year. She is a director from Australia who goes into regional theaters and helps them with marketing and branding and producing their shows in a way that is both sustainable and also sets them up for continued success as a theater. She talks about what she looks for behind the table and how we as actors can try too hard in showing what we do. But first, she shares the story from her early days of being a triple threat, or at least trying to be.
I can remember my first professional audition was for Cats in Australia. I had no internet, no knowledge of the show, just ridiculous. I was about 18, so it's the early days of musical theatre in Brisbane, so the industry itself is very fresh. So no one, and I'd been learning singing for a few years, knew nothing, it was ridiculous. And so my entire prep for this audition was my outfit. So it was, you know, the flash dance look. So we had the grey track pants and I'd cut off the neck and the sleeves for my sweat top so that it fell nicely off the shoulder.
Oh, my goodness.
And the pale pink leggings. And that was it. This was it. I just was ready. And my audition piece, I still have the original piece of sheet music that I used, was All That Jazz from Chicago.
Okay.
Sung by an 18-year-old. That was really interesting. I had a big dance break in the third verse, which I was convinced I was going to get to do.
I love that.
Not
you had a third
clue.
Verse. The fact
I
that
know,
you had
a third verse. But big kicks in the third verse, Patrick. It really was hilarious. So I walked into the dance studios where the auditions were and I was like walking into a giant furball. Everyone was dressed as a cat and I thought, I'm slightly underdressed here. But I thought, okay, well, it's too late now. It was hilarious. There must have been 100 people in this space and they were just, you know, it was very foreign to me, this whole world. I was brand new to it. And they called my name and I walked into the space and it was a mirrored room. And my first thought, I kid you not, was my kicks are going to look fantastic in these mirrors. That was it. So I gave my music to the pianist and I am embarrassed to say that I asked him, I said, look, can you play it in this key? Sight read it, just transpose it by sight. So he didn't for the entire 10 bars that I got to sing. And everyone was very, very nice. But, oh, my gosh, I cringe looking back at it. But I wrote a blog about this because I have seen thousands of auditions. And I thought, no, next time you have a really bad, what you think is a bad audition, just remember Cherilee's Cats audition and her pink leg warmers. And, honey, you're going to be fine because nothing can be as bad as this. Needless to say, I didn't get the job. Surprising, but I look back at that with great fondness.
So as a director behind the table, have you seen anything like that in front of you?
I have. I actually saw one young lady who had a different costume for each 16 bars. And I think we were all in shock at the time. It was just a thing. It was a cabaret show. They had three separate sections they had to present. And multiple characters in this show, and she wanted to change character, costume each time. And I think we're all in shock because we let her. We just wanted to see what would come next, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It was hilarious. But again, that was another case of not enough research, not knowing what you're doing. But no, most of the time, it's the biggest issue is it's not enough personality of them, not enough of them trusting themselves, putting their own self into it, and going, okay, this is what I've got. I'm going to have fun with this. And so they try to present what they think you want rather than just giving you them. And I think that's probably the biggest mistake I see. I think every actor, if it was at all possible, every actor should spend time behind on the other side of the casting desk, because it's an eye-opener for a performer to know that the casting panel really do want you to do well. They want you to be the right person for that puzzle that they're trying to complete. They're not waiting for you to fail. I have never met, I'm sure they're probably out there, but I have never met anyone on a casting panel that wants that. But that's what sits in an actor's head is, you know, what do I have to be for you? Well, honey, just be yourself.
Yeah.
Certainly you're presenting a characterization, but it's, relax, have some fun with it. But, yeah, being behind that casting panel is an eye-opener for you to see that, well, yes, this is a giant jigsaw puzzle. It's not about just because they didn't pick me doesn't mean I'm no good. It means I don't fit that element of the puzzle. And I think it's very helpful for a performer to see it from that side, to get out of their own head. Otherwise, they just live in their own head too much.
And as someone who's taken Cherilee's advice and been behind the table as a reader and watched auditions from that casting director eye, I can attest that it is a great way to see the successes and the failures that we have in the audition room, what works and what doesn't, how sometimes we try too hard, the little quirks, the little habits that we have that get in the way of our audition. In fact, there was one time I was a reader for a theater who was auditioning for a straight play that they were doing in their season. And as someone who does mostly musical theater, it was really fascinating to get a bird's eye view as to how actors approached scenes and monologues that they had to do for the audition. But something else that it does is it also honed my own craft as an actor. Because you see, I was the scene partner for all of these actors that came in. I had to give them as much as they needed to give to the casting team. And so no matter who walked into the room, I was on their team. I was on their side. And I gave them as much motivation and characterization and emotion that I could so that they had something to feed off of. And a little side note, because of how well I did as a reader, the director of that theater actually looked at me and said, "Hey, Are you available to come in and audition for this other show that we're doing?" And that show was Bridges of Madison County, which I auditioned for, got called back for, and booked. And so you never know where being a reader might lead you next. This next story comes from the opening episode of Season 3, when I sat down with Jay Harrison G and Caroline Bowman. The three of us had done Kinky Boots at the Muni, and so we talked a lot about that show and our experiences with it, both in the Broadway cast, the tour, as well as that Muni production. And this brings me to the third myth when it comes to the audition book. When they ask us to sing a song that shows our range, we think that means just hit your highest note. But as Mary Sugarman of Tara Rubin Casting says, you can't show your whole bag of tricks in 16 bars. What we're really looking for is your storytelling and your acting. And so Jay and Caroline share stories of how auditioning is more than just singing pretty and hitting a high note.
Earlier this year, I was in auditions for the revival of Dreamgirls, and I've always seen myself as a perfect Cece, like now, later in life, a perfect Curtis, but never imagined myself as Jimmy Early, ever. Didn't think about it, wasn't on my radar at all, and they were having me come in for Jimmy Early. And I was like, okay. So I like go in the room, like sing the stuff, and they're like, okay, you sound great. Now unbutton your shirt and like sing from your crotch. They're like, you're too pretty. It's too clean. It's too Jimmy.
Oh, they want to mess it up.
They're like, you have to rough him up. You've got to be dirty. You've got to like be careful. You have to do the most. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did that, and they're like, great. Left the room sweating. Like, it was wonderful. They ended up bringing me back in for a work session with the musical supervisor and casting. And again, they're just working through things, and they're like, okay, great. Just dirty him up. Like, make him rougher. Like, throw caution to the wind. And as I was in the room, I realized to myself, I was so used to being told or like regimented of like, okay, these are your parameters, be within these things. Mm. And these people were literally asking me to just do whatever and not care. I was like, oh. And again, I left the room sweating and like a little out of breath, because I was like, oh God, yo, like put me through the ringer, like doing this. But also it showed me that I could be much more than I thought I could. And I was glad I had that opportunity to just be like, all right, there's more in me. And there's still more I can find in my voice and in my choices and how I carry myself. And even after having played Lola, which was such a like over the top character, I was like, oh, I can be even further than that.
Mm. Yeah, it is interesting. We get kind of in our little box about, okay, this is how I get cast. These are the roles, that this is what my voice does.
Yeah.
But then to be told, no, go over there, where you haven't been before.
They were like, yeah, we love that little growl you did and this little thing and that little air you let in your voice here. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know I could. I had been such a like pretty singer all the time. And I was like, oh no, I can be gritty. I can be dirty. I can go there if I let myself.
All right. I like that. All right, Caroline, your turn.
I have one now. So I was auditioning for the Falsettos tour. They originally were calling me in for Cordelia. Is that the lesbian from Next Door, I think?
I can't remember the character's name.
I was like, if I'm going to go on tour, I want to play Trina. I wanted to play the Stephanie J. Block character. But I knew I was a little young and knew I probably wouldn't get it. But I was like, I want this. And so I went in for James Lapine and just casting the first day. And a lot of people had, apparently James Lapine in the room is very, like, he will test you. Like, he's very, like, he's not afraid to, like, poke at you, especially if he likes you. So a lot of people had warned me about him before I went in the room. And so I was ready to, like, be sassy with him. And there was two songs, the Holding to the Ground, and then the funny song is I'm Breaking Down, and she's literally having a breakdown, like chopping watermelon, and there's lots of props that make it really funny too.
Yeah.
And we had already like shot the shit a little bit. We like talked, and I was joking with him, and I sang, but he wanted me to sing Holding to the Ground, and he like really worked on it with me, like as an acting piece, and it was really fun. Like, I got to a really emotional place with it, and it was like really deep. And I finished, and he was like, okay, I can tell that you're funny, so you don't have to sing the other song. And so I was like, great, I guess I'm getting a callback. So I did. I got a callback for the whole entire team. And for my whole life, pretty much, and I don't always do this, but I've been told that you're supposed to wear the same thing Have you been heard?
I've heard this. Yeah. And when you call back, wear the same thing.
And William Finn was going to be in the room. And so I was like, I'll wear the same dress. I was like my housewife. Like it was like a 1950s looking dress with a sweater over top. Like it was very Trina to me. And so I walk in the room and the first thing James Lapine goes, he goes, "Oh, you made a big mistake." And the whole room is, there was like 15 people in the room. He goes, "You made a big mistake." And I was like, "What?" And he's like, "You wore the same thing twice. Like, why would you do that? You don't do that. You don't do that with James Lapine." Like, and he started bashing me.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, okay. He's giving me shit. Like, this is what people told me. And so I was like, "Well," I was like, "William Finn hasn't seen the dress. I wore it for him." And William Finn was like, "What is there, like fruit on it?" Like he wasn't having it either. Nobody was having it. And then I ended up auditioning and I started singing Holding to the Ground again. I don't really think it affected. I think I was like keeping my cool, but he stopped me and he goes, "Sing it to us." He was very like not talking to me. He was very like forward and I'm like, okay. And so he wanted me to sing it into the eyes of everybody. And I just started bawling, like to the point where I couldn't really sing the song. I just started like, I had a full out like breakdown singing Holding to the Ground. Then he was like, "Go right into I'm Breaking Down." He fully made me have a breakdown to sing I'm Breaking Down. It was kind of weird. I think that's what he did. Like he fully was trying to make me break down so that
he was pushing you.
I had a breakdown while I was singing like, "I'm breaking down. My life is shitty and my kid seems like an idiot to me." Like I was like, "Oh my God. Well, I mean, this is either like you're torturing me or this is the best acting exercise I've ever had." And I walked out of there. I was like, "What just happened?" Like I'm sweating from every single pore in my whole body.
And I assume you had no idea how they're receiving it because you're so like concerned.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
probably looked crazy. I think I looked crazy.
Oh my God.
But whatever. It was fine. I'm glad I went in for the part that I wanted to go in for. Yeah. I just didn't. Yeah. I knew I was a little young and that's what my feedback was. But
yeah.
It's an easy feedback if you ask for it. So, which is why I don't ask for feedback anymore. I'm just like, if I got the
because
job,
not
I got
give
the
it.
Job. If and it's not going to be helpful, really.
No.
Unless literally they say, "You know what? They didn't like this choice."
Right. Right.
And they liked this choice better.
From now on, when you audition, do X, Y, and Z, and that's how you need to present. But it's like,
right.
Oh, okay.
Right. But if I don't need feedback, if it's going to be, you're too young. Cool. I can't really work on that. Anyway, I'm excited to audition for James Lapine again because I guess I'll wear two different outfits. So if he calls me
No. I think you should wear that exact same dress and be like, "I'm
actually,
back."
Actually, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And be like,
"I'm coming for you, James Lapine." Right.
You loved it so much. I'm doing it again.
Up next is another audition story very similar to Caroline's, and it highlights myth number 4. You don't need the full song in your audition book. As Caroline illustrated, she actually had 2 full songs that she had to sing in her audition. And while yes, that was an appointment and a callback, it's still something that we need to have prepared in that initial audition. Again, Mary Sugarman says, "If they're only preparing 16 bars, it tells me a lot about how they approach their work not only as actors but as singers, and that concerns me." In my own life, I was in Sacramento once auditioning for the Sacramento Music Circus, and I brought in my 32-cut bar. It was a Josh Groban song because they were doing a contemporary musical, so I brought in a song that had both a verse and a chorus. It told a story. It had some range, both as an actor but also vocally, and I thought that that's all I needed. So I got to the end of my selection and waited for the response, and the casting director said, "Do you have the second verse?" And I paused and said, "No, I just have this cut." And his face told it all. It was both disappointment and I could tell right then that he had kind of written me off as, "Oh, this actor's not really prepared for this audition."
Now, that's not to say that I now bring in the full version of every song that I do, but I have since made an effort to know the entire song and have available more than what I'm auditioning for at that particular audition. And so, as I mentioned, this next story is from Janine DeVita, and it shows how important it is for that audition book to have the best that we have to offer.
So a director who shall remain nameless was auditioning for a show, and I was super excited to go in and had us all learn a 6-minute song, the whole thing, and then a 4-minute song, the whole thing. And normally they're cuts, you know, so, but this was one where the audition material was literally epic. And it's a patter song, and it's just a lot, you know, and I'm ready to go, and I'm excited to do the material. And I went in, and he decided to go through my book and pick a song from my book to sing.
Don't you love it when they do that? It's like, I mean, if you know your book, then it's okay. But if there are a few things in there that maybe you haven't touched in a while.
Yeah, and I would never sing from my book. I'm always preparing material from the shows. I mean, my book has, you know, good stuff in it, but I just, you know, I hardly ever sing from it. I always prefer to sing something from the show, because then the guesswork is done and you can just, you know, make that song your own. And so anyways, it picks a song from my book. It's When in Rome. It's a Cy Coleman song. And it's When in Rome, you do with the Romans, disregard the signs and the omens. Like, it's a very fun, jazzy song. And he has me do it. He's looking at my resume. And he has me do it as Rizzo.
Okay.
So this is my audition now. It's doing a song that I've done a million times, and I've sung it since college. And it's one of my favorite, like, go-to fun songs to do. As Rizzo. And this is my audition. I mean, I'm thinking at the time it's, you know, in addition to the material that I've prepared. So I sing the song and he's working with me and, you know, whatever, and I'm improvising and all this stuff. And you're just like going, yes, and you're like doing everything, you know, like you're just like going for it and I'm doing it and the room is laughing and it's great. And then he has me sing the ballad, that the 4-minute song that I prepared. And then he goes, thanks so much. And I'm like, I literally go, you're not going to have me sing the 6-minute song you had me learn.
I love that you called him out.
I just said it. And he goes, no, I saw your funny bone in the improv. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I was like, okay, thank you so much. And I left. I went straight to the bathroom and I bawled. Just because you're so heightened in those situations where it's a total curveball and, you know, whatever. And, you know, I'm going with it and whatever. But like, oh, my God, I just went to the bathroom and I was like, oh, and I just let it all out. And I came out and the casting director came to find me. He goes, the director wanted me to tell you he did a great job. Don't take it personally. He's just sick of hearing that song. And I'm like, oh, my God. I called my mom after that, and I was just like, I think I'm quitting the business. Like,
yeah, it can be exhausting.
It was just so much. And it's not that it was a bad audition. It was just an emotional roller coaster. So, you know what? But now I can do a Cy Coleman song as Rizzo. Special skills.
Right? Put that in the special skills now. Yeah, I can do Rizzo to any song in my book. Go.
Yeah, I can basically do Rizzo with any song. I take any song and I can turn it on its head and be a really, you know, angsty teen.
Yeah, Laurie from Oklahoma, Rizzo.
Many New Day, Rizzo.
Hello.
Definitely a Rizzo song.
Yeah.
Now, Janine's story touches on the fifth and final myth we're going to debunk when it comes to audition books. You don't need a table of contents. Now, there's actually two reasons for having a table of contents in your audition book. Now, number one, it just helps you because, say, they ask for a second song, then you can look at your table of contents and pick it much easier than going page by page by page. And what about the, wait, where's that song? And it keeps you from having to fumble through all of the pages,
which is another reason to have a thinner, more streamlined audition book. But the second reason to have that table of contents is that the pianist, which sometimes in auditions is the actual musical director of the show, will go through and can easily look at that table of contents and see the types of songs that you do, the types of characters that you're right for, and can get a better sense of the kind of singer you are. You might even be asked to sing something else because they noticed it in your book, netting you a callback right there in the room. But sometimes, even with that audition book there, we as actors get all caught up in the moment and decide to go in a different direction. This next story highlights that to a T. Joshua Morgan, who's currently on Broadway in Ain't Too Proud, talks about an audition where, number one, he didn't research the show as well as he should have, and number two, abandoned his audition book for a much better idea.
I know Lonnie Price and his associate Matt Cowart really well. They're doing the revival of Sunset, and I get a call to come in for the happy birthday, welcome to your shopathon, whatever that part is. Okay. I don't really know the show that well. That's important. I go, and I was pretty prepared, and I go in the room, and I do the song, and Lonnie's like, great, 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 do it again, have more fun with it. And I do it again, and I'm having a blast with it and playing with the reader. And he goes, okay, it's really great. He's like, it's great. He's like, you know, I think you might be a little young for this part. He's like, so I want you to look at this other material in the back of the packet. And Kristen Blodgett is the musical director. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, great. So I go out in the hallway, and I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at these little scenes. I don't realize they're sung, by the way, because they're just, I don't know the show. So there's all these little scenes. Okay, so I go back in. And I do the scenes, and they go really well because I didn't know they were sung. I thought they were little scenes. So he's like, this is really great. And Kristen, so she was like, well, clearly you're everything. She's like, I just want to hear your best 16 bars.
Great.
Well, I go, okay, well, why don't I sight read?
I'm already seeing the disaster.
The
ahead.
Song you've included in the packet.
Oh, boy.
Which is... this sometime next year. I don't know. We even know what the song is.
Right. Well, obviously. Yeah.
Eric Woodall was casting it, and she goes, okay, what part do you sing? And he's like, oh, wait, tenor one. Okay. All right. All right. So I'm like looking at the music, and my book, by the way, is sitting on the piano. And we can just go, and I'm doing it, whatever the hell it is. And I turn the page, and all of a sudden, it's like bees, okay? I'm literally gripping the piano to try and screaming these notes at the top of my lungs. I do the whole song, and I finish, and it's silent. And Kristen goes, well, clearly you're a great actor. All goes to say, I did not get the part, and I feel very confident that if I had just sung "Wonder of Wonders," whatever the hell "Miracle of Miracles" thing, the song,
your best 16 in that book,
I would have been fine.
You would have been great.
So that was one. But let me tell you about the one last week. So I signed with their voiceover agent, and it's for Coca-Cola. They sent me out right away. It's tomorrow.
Great.
And I went back and I said, just so you know, this is my very first voiceover audition. Do you have any tips? Because I've never really had like a on appointment new.
And it is a very different structure of audition voiceover. Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect. They said, oh, well, it's a paired audition. So just show up early to read the copy. Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So I show up. Coca-Cola guy, girl. When I meet this woman, Barbara, and I'm talking, hey, Barbara, how are you? We're talking. And I read over the copy, assume I'm going to do it with Barbara, because she's auditioning for the same thing. And they're talking about what you're drinking, or who knows. And it's about some contest that Coca-Cola is having. So I go to the bathroom. So I go to the bathroom, and I come back, and the casting director goes, Joshua? And I was like, oh, okay. And she's like, did you have a chance to look it over? I was like, yeah, it's fine. It's fine. And, you know, it's just four or five lines. At the bottom of the page, there is this legal mumbo jumbo. I walk in the booth. And Barbara doesn't come in after me, the woman I had just met. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And I get in there, and the microphone's really high, really high up. So I pull it down.
Oh, you touched the mic.
No, don't touch the mic. I'm sorry, Agent was too high.
Thing. That's one of the first things.
I thought Patrick Jones was here. He's much taller than me. I didn't know. Okay, so like just slate and go into the copy. Well, I've never slate. I don't. So I go, hi there. This is Joshua Morgan. And they stop. No. Just say your name and the character.
Okay. Oh, this is so funny.
Joshua Morgan, Guy. They stop again. No, Joshua, you're not reading Guy, you're reading the legal. I hadn't even looked at the legal.
Okay. You're reading the legal. Oh my gosh.
So I go, Joshua Morgan, legal. And then I have to sight read this.
Yeah, because you've never looked at it.
Two major sight reading disasters. I've not, yeah. Now had an audition. And I'm reading it slowly. Offer expires December 20th. Like, no. Read it. You have to read it quickly. You've heard a commercial. You know, it goes quick. Joshua Morgan, legal. Offer expires December. Delete. They do again. Joshua Morgan, legal. Offer expires December. I cannot get it out because I'm nervous.
Just the first two words. Yeah.
So then I finally get it out. But it's like a dramatic, angry machine gun. Offer expires December 29th. I'm like angry. I'm like shaking. And they're like, okay, can you just... I mean, this audition could not have been going any worse. And I stop it. And I was like, you guys, before we go any further, I just need to acknowledge how absurd this all is because I've never actually been on a voiceover audition before. And I'm doing so incredibly horribly. Thank God.
So you said all that.
I said that. And they laughed.
They had to. They had to be like, okay.
They were like, this makes so much sense. And then it went great after that.
Good.
They let me do it three more times. Okay. They said, we like your energy. They said, we want that humor. And it went really well. But it was a disaster leading up to it.
Wow. You know what? That's probably the best thing you could have done is just own it and be like, this is going horribly, but I have never done this before. And here we are.
Here we go.
Here we are. Let's do this.
Legal.
One of the biggest questions that I get from fellow actors that I talk to, as well as listeners that reach out to me, is about representation. And almost that first step before even getting into the audition room is getting an agent to submit you and then getting in that audition, especially when it comes to voiceover auditions and commercial auditions like the one that Joshua just talked about. And last year, I had Terry Dollar on the program. She was there to talk about this wonderful nonprofit organization that she does in working with those with special needs and putting them on stage and giving them roles and characters to portray. But her main job is that of a talent agent. And so I asked her specifically, what is it that you look for? What is it that really gets you going and piques your interest when it comes to actors?
I mean, usually it's a type. Usually I'll say, ooh, we really don't have very many, say, Asian actors, or we don't really, you know, we want to have everything. Like if a casting director is saying, I need an 85-year-old African-American woman, we want to have her. We don't want to say, oh, we don't really represent anybody like that. So, you know, if I find a fantastic actor that I think is a certain type, then I'm all over the moon. Then I'll find an actor who can do just about anything. And I'll say, good God. I mean, we started representing Jesse Gephardt. I don't know if you know him, but he's an amazing, very, very talented actor from here. I mean, he's like a chameleon. I think he's fantastic. So we're looking for talent, but we're also looking for the ability to make it happen. Because I can find an amazing actor and they can say, well, you know, I work as an emergency room nurse and I'm, you know, I still want to do this. And I'm going, right. What are you going to do when you get cast for a week? Can you leave your job for a week? Can you? Because I don't want to have somebody fall in love with you and you're never available. So, and I'm always skeptical of theater actors for that very reason. And I just started representing David Henderson. I said, don't tell me you're going to be doing plays all the time because you'll never be available to me. So I need to know. And he said, no, I'm ready. So I was like, okay, I need to know.
So do you do mostly on camera?
Yeah, we do some theater. We've had kids do theater. We had a kid in The King and I. But we do find, but I usually find new actors through theater though.
Yeah. Because then that's my background, and I know, hey, I already know if it's a kid that has done a bunch of theater, I already know you're going to get it. You'll get
right,
it.
Right, right. They at least have the foundation there, because it's a different skill set on camera, but it's one that can be...
Absolutely.
Yeah, that can be
absolutely
taken there.
So, you know, talent is one thing, but a willingness, and for a kid actor, you know, do you have a parent who can make this happen?
Right, right. Then it's about getting to the audition, yeah. getting to the production, getting to the... Yeah. Right, right.
I mean, you do you have a job that you can take off? What if he gets cast as, you know, working the show for 3 weeks? Can you stop your job and go be with him on set for 3 weeks?
So, yeah, that's true. Yeah, you have to take that in consideration.
But technology has changed, and that's been one of the beautiful things. I mean, even when I was an actor, we might tape sometimes, or we would tape, and then you would have callbacks in person. But now almost everything first round is tape.
Right.
But North Carolina was kind of ahead of that, because we weren't L.A. or New York, so we were sending tapes to L.A. and New York 25 years ago. I was rushing off with this VHS tape to get it in FedEx by 9 o'clock so it would be there the next morning. It's just so nice how we can instantly
right,
say,
right, now you can just email it. Yeah.
I mean, we even do Skype callbacks now. And
oh, right,
sometimes
yeah.
we have the director online, and he can be direct, you know, redirecting an actor, and they can make those adjustments. Then we film that. So it's wonderful. And I tell actors all the time, don't whine to me about having to drive to a callback. Do you know how many times I, as an actor, would drive to an audition? I would say my two lines. I was in there at least 3 minutes, and they would say, thank you. And they knew the minute I walked in, she's not this. She's not that. She's too fat. She's too skinny. She's
I've been
old,
there. Yeah. Yeah. As soon as you walk in, you're like, oh, I'm not really right for this.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. You know it.
So, yeah. And you know. And so I'm like, and you didn't have to waste. Well, you wasted an hour to tape this. So cry me a river. You know, I'm not feeling sorry for you.
Well, Terry Dollar has never been one to hold back her opinion. Yes, I get what she's saying, but believe me, as someone who has been doing a lot more self-taping lately, it is just the bane of our actor existence now. I mean, yes, there's something to be said for being able to do as many takes as you want to get it right, but there is the cost of renting the space. There's making sure your lighting's right. There's making sure you have a cameraman. Obviously, often you have to have a reader to go with it, and finding a pianist if it's a musical audition. There's so many things that basically we have to do the job of the casting director. And I get it. They have a lot going on, and it's easier for them. I get it. But basically, their burden has now become our burden. And it just makes that part of auditioning, the self-tape part of auditioning, that much harder and, to be honest, more stressful. But I will say that, for example, I'm on a ship right now, and a self-tape is the only way I can audition. So I'm certainly grateful that self-tape exists and is a possibility for me. Well, I certainly hope you have enjoyed this look at auditions. To finish out this episode, Brett Shuford, who is a life coach and Broadway actor himself, with his own happy story of how he landed Beauty and the Beast. For extra bonus audio that you didn't hear in this episode, follow Why I'll Never Make It on Instagram at WinMePodcast. And if you have an audition story that you would love to share, send me an email at whyillnevermakeit@gmail.com. Until next week, I'm Patrick Oliver Jones, reminding you that the reasons for not making it may be frustrating and involve audition after audition, but the reasons to keep going are even more numerous and rewarding. I'll see you next week on Why I'll Never Make It.
I was highly unemployed, and I got an appointment for Beauty and the Beast, but my friend had invited me to go to a trip to Paris to stay at a chateau that he was renting for a week, and he was inviting his friends to come along, and it was going to be totally paid for, except I just had to get myself there. And I was like, I'm going to freaking Paris.
Of course.
And the appointment came in for Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, and it was, you know, understudied Lumiere in the ensemble, but it was a Saturday morning and my flight was Saturday afternoon. And it was an immediate replacement. It was supposed to start like that Monday. And I was like, I'm flying to Paris Saturday. Even if I get this, I don't know what I'm going to do. But I brought my suitcase packed with me to the audition. And I go through the audition and the choreographer comes out to use the bathroom or something. He's like, what's the suitcase? And I was like, oh, I'm leaving for Paris today. Well, what are you going to do if you get this? I was like, I'm going to ask you guys to wait. And he was like, okay. And then he, like, I go in the room and I had been practicing my French, so my Lumiere accent was like on point. And I left and I go to the airport and I'm in line to get on the plane and my agent calls me, literally in line to get on the plane. And my agent calls me. He's like, you booked it. And they're going to let you start in a week.
That is amazing. I mean,
and then the kicker is because the show takes place in France, I wrote the whole thing off of my taxes as research.
There you go. Always thinking of the angle. Yes, I love that.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.